Susan Calvin had never left the surface of Earth before, and had no perceptible desire to leave it this time. In an age of atomic power and a clearly coming hyperatomic drive, she remained quietly provincial. So she was dissatisfied with her trip and unconvinced of the emergency, and every line of her plain, middle-aged face showed it clearly enough during her first dinner at Hyperbase. Nor did Dr. Bogart's sleek paleness abandon a certain hangdog attitude. Nor did Major General Colner, who headed the project, even once forget to maintain a hunted expression. In short, it was a grisly episode, that meal, and the little session of three that followed began in a gray, unhappy manner. Colner, with his baldness glistening and his dress uniform oddly unsuited to the general mood, began with uneasy directness. "This is a queer story to tell, sir and madam. I want to thank you for coming on short notice and without a reason being given. We'll try to correct that now. We've lost a robot. Work has stopped and must stop until such time as we locate it. So far, we have failed and we feel we need expert help." Perhaps the general felt his predicament anticlimactic. He continued with a note of desperation. "I needn't tell you the importance of our work here. More than 80% of last year's appropriations for scientific research have gone to us." "Why, we know that," said Bogart agreeably. "U.S. Robots is receiving a generous rental fee for use of our robots." Susan Calvin injected a blunt, vinegary note. "What makes a single robot so important to the project, and why hasn't it been located?" The general turned his red face toward her and wet his lips quickly. "Why, in a manner of speaking, we have located it." Then, with near anguish, "Here, suppose I explain. As soon as the robot failed to report, a state of emergency was declared, and all movement off Hyperbase stopped. A cargo vessel had landed the previous day and had delivered us two robots for our laboratories. It had 62 robots of the same type for shipment elsewhere. We are certain as to that figure. There is no question about it whatever."
"Yes.
And the connection?" "When our missing robot failed of location anywhere, I assure you we would have found a missing blade of grass if it had been there to find, we brainstormed ourselves into counting the robots left of the cargo ship. They have 63 now."
"So that the 63rd, I take it, is the missing prodigal?"
Dr. Calvin's eyes darkened.
"Yes,
but we have no way of telling which is the 63rd. There was a dead silence while the electric clock chimed 11 times, and then the robo-psychologist said,
"Very peculiar,"
and the corners of her lips moved downward. "Peter," she turned to her colleague with a trace of savagery, "what's wrong here? What kind of robots are they using at Hyperbase?" Dr. Bogart hesitated and smiled feebly.
"It's been rather a matter of delicacy till now, Susan."
She spoke rapidly.
"Yes, till now. If there are 63 same-type robots, one of which is wanted and the identity of which cannot be determined, why won't any of them do? What's the idea of all this? Why have we been sent for?"
Bogart said in resigned fashion,
"If you'll give me a chance, Susan, Hyperbase happens to be using several robots whose brains are not impressioned with the entire first law of robotics."
"Aren't impressioned?"
Calvin slumped back in her chair.
"I see. How many were made?"
"A few. It was on government order, and there was no way of violating the secrecy. No one was to know except the top men directly concerned. You weren't included, Susan. It was nothing I had anything to do with."
The general interrupted with a measure of authority. "I would like to explain that bit. I hadn't been aware that Dr. Calvin was unacquainted with the situation. I needn't tell you, Dr. Calvin, that there always has been strong opposition to robots on the planet.
The only defense the government has had against the fundamentalist radicals in this matter was the fact that robots are always built with an unbreakable first law, which makes it impossible for them to harm human beings under any circumstance. But we had to have robots of a different nature. So just a few of the NS2 model, the Nestors, that is, were prepared with a modified first law. To keep it quiet, all NS2s are manufactured without serial numbers. Modified members are delivered here along with a group of normal robots, and of course, all our kind are under the strictest impressionment never to tell of their modification to unauthorized personnel. He wore an embarrassed smile. This has all worked out against us now. Calvin said grimly, "Have you asked each one who it is anyhow? Certainly you are authorized." The general nodded. "All 63 deny having worked here, and one is lying." "Does the one you want show traces of wear? The others, I take it, are factory fresh." "The one in question only arrived last month. It and the two that have just arrived were to be the last we needed. There's no perceptible wear." He shook his head slowly, and his eyes were haunted again. "Dr. Calvin, we don't dare let that ship leave. If the existence of non-first law robots becomes general knowledge..." There seemed no way of avoiding understatement in the conclusion. "Destroy all 63, said the robo-psychologist, coldly and flatly, "and make an end of it." Bogart drew back a corner of his mouth. "You mean destroy $30,000 per robot? I'm afraid you as robots wouldn't like that. We'd better make an effort first, Susan, before we destroy anything." "In that case," she said sharply, "I need facts. Exactly what advantage does Hyperbase derive from these modified robots? What factor made them desirable, General?"